Hello, and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and today we're going to talk about what's happening tomorrow, which is the presidential election, and from the perspective of healthcare. We want to look at the plans of the two candidates and see which one is going to work better for you. We're just going to present the issues and let you make up your very own mind. We have two interesting speakers with us today. First, Dr. Nancy Nielsen, who is the president of the American Medical Association, is going to kick off this topic for us. And then we're going to speak with Larry Jemison of the Jemison Group in Georgia. And he works with disadvantaged people, people who are, in fact, uninsured or underinsured in Georgia. And we'll get his perspective on this issue as well. So please stay with us. We have a little message from our sponsor, and then we'll get right into the discussion. Stay with us now. We'll be right back. We're glad to have you with us today on The Powerful Patient. The Powerful Patient works with people who are dealing with complex medical conditions or who may be struggling to get a diagnosis. We help you learn how to manage your health, form a partnership with your healthcare providers, and manage your healthcare team. The Powerful Patient is produced by the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance. It is funded by you, our listeners, through your generous contributions. Read about us on our website at powerfulpatient.org. We welcome your questions, either by email or by telephone, at 1-800-767-4845, extension 6, or questions at powerfulpatient.org. To kick off this program, we'd like to ask Dr. Nancy Nielsen, who is the president of the American Medical Association, to introduce this topic for us. This is a pre-recorded clip from the website sponsored by the AMA dedicated to working on this very difficult problem.
Hello, I'm Dr. Nancy Nielsen, president of the American Medical Association. I'd like to talk with you today about a very serious healthcare problem, the uninsured. The U.S. Census Bureau tells us that 46 million Americans lack health insurance. That means 46 million who are living sicker and will die sooner than their neighbors who have health insurance. That means this winter, 46 million Americans will be forced to decide between buying groceries for their family or filling a prescription for a child. It means 46 million Americans this winter will be forced to choose between heating their home or getting a preventive checkup. The uninsured are our friends and neighbors, our family, our coworkers. Speaking of coworkers, we just learned that the U.S. unemployment rate has reached a five-year high. Without a job, how can anyone afford health insurance if they can even obtain it? We need to give voice to the uninsured. The AMA has a plan to solve this problem. It's a plan that was designed by doctors. It's a plan you can trust, and it's a plan Congress should adopt. Visit www.voiceforTheUninsured.org and join our campaign. That's www.voiceforTheUninsured.org. This is one healthcare problem we can and must fix. Let's make sure that all Americans receive the healthcare coverage they deserve. And on behalf of America's physicians, thank you for your time and for your help.
Thank you, Dr. Nielsen. You'll find more information about the AMA's plan and where to find it in the handout that goes with this show. So be sure to pick that up from powerfulpatient.org. You'll find that elements of this plan have found their way into both of the party's platforms. I've also put pointers to both of the parties' health care plans in the handout. So let's go talk with Larry now and get his perspective.
I am Larry Jemison of the Jemison Group. I am also author of the book, How to Make It in a World That Wasn't Made for You. That's a motivational and success tool that actually encourages those people to meet challenges head on so they can reach the levels of success that they like. My background is that of a traditional businessman. I actually went to Tuskegee University and studied business marketing there, and then went on to Babson College in Massachusetts to get my master's in entrepreneurial finance and strategic cost management. From Babson, right there in Wells.
I know Babson well. My son has an MBA from Babson.
Well, wonderful. You just told me a lot about the guy already. I don't even know him, but with a Babson MBA, I know he's a super fantastic individual.
Thanks.
But I spent about 12 years in the corporate sector in the areas of finance, marketing, and sales. And some of that was done in transportation. Some of that was done in medical sales, and done some telecom. And what I've learned over the years is that, you know, now no matter how wonderful you are or how prepared you are, you're still going to face some of life's challenges. You're still going to have some bumps in the road there.
Sure.
And with those bumps in the road come challenges, and they're going to it's going to really test your mettle there. And healthcare has become a serious issue. One, because of the economic times that we're in. You know, people are losing their homes, and they're losing their jobs and their retirements, and unstable fuel costs and wars. People they're in a different state, both physical and mental, is often deterring. And with nearly 47 million people lacking health insurance, and 9 million of those being children, we really need to step up. We need to step up our efforts as American people. You know, it said that 80% of those uninsured are from working class families. So it's not even like we're taking advantage of or people who are not working or lower class individuals as far as dollars and social status goes. It's not just them being affected. These are working class individuals who are being affected as well. And as American
right.
people, I know we can come together. I've seen it happen. You know, I know how proud we were when Michael Phelps won his 8th medal, and I saw the nation kind of rally. I know how it was after 9/11. The nation really pulled together. We need to do that again. We're in the midst of a crisis. I know a lot of people
right.
who aren't sick and who aren't in the healthcare profession may not know how serious the healthcare issues are.
The people who do have insurance often are oblivious to the problem. They just simply don't get what the problem is until they lose the job and lose the health insurance, and then it's a big awakening.
You're so right. You're so right.
I remember reading an article in Time magazine that said every American is one illness away from bankruptcy.
That's right. That's right. That's all right. I mean, we have come up with $750 billion to bail out the banks and the mortgage lenders so that people can keep their homes and all that good stuff. But if you can't get access to the medicines that you need to breathe and remain healthy, you won't need a bank or a home because, you know, chances of living aren't going to be that great. So we need to make sure we shift some of this focus on health care, and that's one of the reasons why I have champion this issue, not saying that I'm the expert, but definitely one of those whose heart is trying to be in the right place and trying to look out for those people who are ill, which we're talking about over 133 million Americans have at least one chronic disease. And of those chronic diseases, we're talking about $1.7 trillion a year in spending.
So by chronic diseases, you mean things like diabetes and heart disease and those kinds of things.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Diseases
right.
that we would love to spend more dollars on in the prevention stage to help you know, those individuals never to become ill or sick, if possible.
Right. And when people don't have insurance, they generally don't go for preventive care. They only go for crisis medicine.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So tell me what you're seeing in your community. I mean, you're from Georgia, and you work with a lot of people who are at the lower end of the socioeconomic level, I'm assuming, right?
Sure.
So what's the impact that you see there? There
there are people down there who do have Medicaid and so forth, and then there's, as you say, the working poor, people who work sometimes even two and three jobs, but who aren't making very much money, and it's all they can do to make ends meet. And the health insurance costs are frequently one of the ones that they elect not to spend because they need to buy groceries.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, what we're seeing is that it's one of those things where health insurance premiums are continuing to rise. They're rising four times as fast as wages in the past 6 years. I mean, that's just, those are just the numbers, which is causing increased copays and higher deductions, making it tough. So individuals in my area are choosing to skip getting therapy. They're skipping those medical treatments and saying, I just can't afford it. I'm going to have to look for alternative ways to get myself back healthy. I've seen people looking for natural herbs and just really trying different tactics to try to find out what's going to bring them back to health. And with, you know, with wages and those losing their jobs, it's a crapshoot. They're gambling with their lives every time they put something in their body that
right.
We haven't studied, we haven't tested.
Well, and
they're gambling, but it's worth the risk for them.
We're not saying that you have to have a drug in order to be well. That's not the point. But certain kinds of conditions, like diabetes, for example, you do need certain chemicals that you cannot get at a health food store that need to help your body chemistry be in balance. And, for example, I spoke with a woman not too long ago who had gotten a kidney transplant. And she said, my kidney transplant has failed. I said, why is that? She said, because I couldn't afford the medicines. Now, people need to know that if you don't take your anti-rejection medicine, you will lose that transplant.
Mm-hmm.
And life on dialysis is more expensive and a whole bunch less fun than life with a transplant. So, in fact, there are resources in the community. People just need to ask, but there are resources to keep you taking your medication and not losing that transplant.
We need to
educate these consumers and help them know that they shouldn't be embarrassed. They must ask because it's their, as you say, they're gambling with their lives.
Sure. And quality of health care, in my opinion, has improved over the last 60, 70 years. That's without a fact. But who's able to obtain that quality health care or that
right.
education? You know, many of these individuals that we're discussing, maybe they don't have access to the Internet. They don't have
right.
access to the articles that are being written.
Right.
You know, there are, you know, insulin has done a lot for our community. Penicillin has done a lot for our community. I mean, we've come, we've made some strides, but those who are ill have to have some passageway to get that information. And if we don't do what we need to do, they won't get that information, and, you know, possibly they won't get healthy.
Right. And things like fast foods are a negative on your health. They're not supporting people to be healthy, and so people who are working three jobs are much more likely to grab a hamburger on the way between. So that kind of junk food syndrome is also tends to be a little bit more prevalent at the lower end of the socioeconomic ladder.
Sure, sure. And it's so convenient. I mean, I'm guilty of it as well. I'll pick up a burger here or there, knowing that it's not healthy. But
I mean,
you're in a rush, you need that fuel, and you grab it. And, you know, it's one of those things you're going to have to balance it out. And then we also have to, you know, find some type of exercise regimen as well. It's so easy to say, I'm just going to go home and get on the couch and watch a little TV. But we have to combine, you know, that education, that knowledge with a healthy regimen, eating as well as exercising.
Let's take a little break here, and we'll be back shortly to talk more with Larry about his take on the key issues that are facing the presidential candidates.
This is Keith Richards, a.k.a. Just Saying. Is there cancer in your family? There is in mine. But it doesn't have to be bad. we can take action to protect ourselves. I've learned how to get screened and manage my health so that I'll live a long, healthy life. How about you? Visit www.powerfulpatient.org. Again, that's www.powerfulpatient.org. Peace.
This is Joyce Graff. We're back now speaking with Larry Jemison about the key issues facing the presidential candidates in healthcare.
So what do you think are the key issues that the presidential candidates are batting around?
I think there's a couple. One definitely is revising the Medicare to find out, if this is Medicare, we need to make sure that it's a policy that's going to benefit the physicians. It's going to, ensure the quality care for the patients, and that the drug companies, the prescription drug companies, are on board as well. So I think everybody needs some skin in the game to make this work. I think both candidates have said some great things as far as going, as far as what we need to do or how we need to tackle the issue. So there may be bits and pieces of each that we can use. But I think Senator Obama came out when he did the survey for the American Academy of Family Physicians and said that every American has the right to affordable, comprehensive health care, and that, this should be done by partnering employers with private health plans and the assistance from the government. So it goes back to who all has a position or a stake in the healthcare plan so that we can all benefit.
Right. I mean, some countries have a single-payer system where the government basically runs a healthcare system. And I think that's the one that most Americans don't want the most. And I think we probably don't trust the government to run an efficient and very, very good, high-quality medical care system for us. We'd rather have it be an open market.
Sure, and I think that's fine. I think the reasoning behind that is very evident. Government spending is at an all-time high,
right?
And we're oftentimes we're getting people are throwing taxes out at us, as if that's the issue, and we care about taxes. We definitely care about taxes. But taxes over the last 25 years have remained relatively stable. They go up, they go down, they go up, they go down.
Right.
But really, government spending is what has gotten out of control. That's what's gotten reckless. And with the government being the largest consumer in the world, that's what's scaring the society.
One of the things that I hear coming to the fore, and the American Medical Association, by the way, also has a plan out for how we can extend health care to all Americans, because it's becoming a societal issue, a very large societal issue for us, that we don't have health care for all. Why do I care if somebody at the other end of the ladder in Georgia doesn't get health care? The reason I care is because that person may get desperate and make some bad choices and do some violent act that is bad for his family and bad for everybody else that gets caught in the crossfire. It also means that if that person doesn't get good care and winds up disabled, you and I are going to wind up paying the bills for that person for the rest of his life, right?
Mm-hmm.
It
That's
means
great.
That his children may not be taken care of. And so there's a whole waterfall of things that occurs when someone is ill and not properly taken care of. And it's not just a problem for that individual. It's not just a problem for that family. It really is a problem for the society.
It is. It's a societal issue, and if we don't jump on it now, it's going to be even larger, an even larger problem than it is now. And when I look at the numbers, the total cost, it's just amazing. It's mind-boggling. Where we are when it comes to off-balance sheet obligations to the American people.
Right. So I think most of the plans are centering around some sort of access to insurance. And insurance is an incredible game in this country. I just organized insurance for a new employee in my organization. And getting the rates and comparing the rates was pretty amazing. Like, she's 21, so for her it's like $225 a month. I'm 65, so my rates are $750 a month. Mm-hmm. If we put the two of us into one plan, then her rate goes to 500 and my rate goes to 500. Now that sounds mm-hmm. good to me, but of course it's a lousy deal for her. So we're keeping the two of us in two separate plans.
And, sure.
You know, so things like that. I mean, it's craziness. If you go to a hospital and you have no insurance, you pay more than Blue Cross pays because Blue Cross has a bigger buying center. There's no feeling like, well, this person has nobody to help him with his bill, so we shouldn't charge him the $7,000. No. You owe the $7,000. It used to be that if you had no insurance, you could negotiate down with the hospital because, after all, they didn't have to do the paperwork with the insurance carrier and, mm-hmm. and wait 6 months to get paid, that they would be glad to settle with you for half. These days, that's not true.
That's right. And
it's reversed. Now, the individual is going to pay more than the insurance company will pay.
That's right. And using the examples that you just used, yourself and the other young lady, you know, one in two Americans will need some type of long-term health care. Only one in four can afford it, and only 1% of Americans at this point have bought into long-term health insurance. So whether it's you or this other young lady, you have to feel like you're both needed at some point.
Sure.
It's just, what will that cost structure be, and how will it be paid for?
Well, you can imagine, I mean, and I'm in a group plan. So here at 65, I'm on a fixed income and have a $750 a month bill for health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most people on a fixed income scarcely get $750 a month.
Sure.
So
sure.
You're going to choose between rent and groceries versus a $750 bill from your health insurance provider, right? And I don't spend that much. I feel like I need insurance because you can't afford not to have it if you're going to get a major illness. But on a day-to-day basis, I don't spend $750 a month on medical care.
Sure.
So a lot of people decide to just gamble.
That's right. They don't have any options, and that's what we're pushing them to. And then those who did once have, with the stock market and the housing market doing what it's doing, a lot of them have lost a great deal of what they could have been using for health care.
Right.
You know, if you retired 10 years ago and you said, hey, I have a nest egg of $1.1 million, I'm doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But if you weren't watching the market over the last 3 or 4 months, and, I mean, you could have legitimately lost a third of your retirement
yep.
in the course of 40, 50 days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's another reason why I think Obama's responses are just a little bit more sound when it comes to health care, because, you know, he says we do need to strengthen those antitrust laws to prevent insurers from overcharging, you know, not just the patient but also physicians for malpractice.
Right. Yeah. Just spent some time in Denmark. We had a symposium in Denmark, and while we were over there, it came out in the news that the people of Denmark are the happiest people in the world. And why is this? So I had a number of conversations with people in Denmark, and there were three major factors that I identified. One of them is that education is free. If your child is capable, education is paid for through graduate school, through medical school, through whatever this child is capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that takes a big worry off of people's minds. Number two, health care is provided. Nobody's going to jerk you around. If you need an MRI, you need an MRI. And it's quite good health care there. So, and there's no copays. So the health care is just there for you. The third thing, which is I felt was really unique, they have a program of accident compensation. So if you fall down the stairs at home, or if you're injured on the job, or if you're injured on the highway, there is accident compensation from the government. You don't need to sue anybody. You will be taken care of. And that takes a huge amount of cost out of the system, because they don't have to have the liability insurances, they don't have to have the lawyers. All of that begins to dissolve, and you can see where the cost structure then is much lower because of taking those anxieties out of the system.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. And you know, I don't think anyone could have put it any better. I mean, that was a very, 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 very simple plan that you outlined that they're utilizing there. You know, I do motivational speaking workshops around the country, and one of the basic platforms is education before PlayStation. I feel like you have to educate your mind before anything else. That gives you that foundation and opportunity to grow. And then, if we're fortunate enough to remain healthy, it is a formula for happiness. It really is. I mean, mm-hmm. We've become a greedy capitalist society here that think we need things to make us happy, when in all actuality, I bring it back, or I tie it back to friends, family, and fun. And those things are encompassed in the quality of life that we choose, and education as well as healthcare are major components of that. Major
right.
components.
Right.
But I think it's that desire to earn, that desire to turn a buck, that hasn't allowed us to incorporate, you know, the weeding out of the system. I just think that would be so great to know that your health care is covered and you don't have to sue anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would just be fabulous. And I think we're a country that can do it, but we have to get buy-in from the major parties.
So what other factors do you see as being things that you would like whoever's going to be the next president to focus on?
I think definitely we have to do a much better job of organizing our health records. I think that in itself takes time, costs money. When the doctors, when the physicians' assistants are spending more time locating records and doing things that are not directly attributed to the health of that patient, I think you're going to see rising costs.
Right, and so that people don't think that this is just about efficiency in the office, it's a lot more than that. One of the problems in this country is that all of the health records and all of the records about different diseases are very scattered. It's in different hospitals, it's in different states, and it's very hard to collect it. Why is it important to collect it? Because you get a much broader view when you can look across a large number of records. And in Sweden and in France, where they have one centralized database of tumors for the whole country, they have a much better handle on what's the prevalence of certain kind of tumors, how can we improve the diagnosis of those tumors. I'll give you another simple example. In the UK, for example, there's a registry of people who have gotten certain kinds of knee replacements. The appliance that's installed instead of your real knee, the replacement knee appliance is registered in the centralized database. What they've been able to do with that is to identify faulty appliances. So when people have a knee installed, for example, and 2 weeks later they have to go in and have it swapped out because there's something wrong with it, or they got a terrible infection, that's recorded in the database. And if it begins to see that, everybody with that one particular appliance is having problems, or 80% of them are having problems, then they recall the appliance. We are still using, in the United States, some appliances that were banned in the UK 3 years ago.
Wow.
Because we're not consolidating the information. The only one who knows that is the manufacturer, and it's not in the manufacturer's interest to make that public.
And that's something that I would think hits directly home in your neck of the woods, seeing that your quarterback went down with a knee injury.
Oh, yeah.
and he's part of the 1% who had the infection to actually penetrate the knee.
Right.
So
this is something that could affect an awful lot of people, and it's one of those little silent problems that are lurking in our very disorganized society.
Let's take a little break here, and we'll be back to talk more with Larry. Coming up in the program, we're going to talk about what happens when the baby boomers retire and how we're going to get poor people to be able to get preventive care. How do we make sure that they don't become disabled because they weren't treated properly? How can we reduce the total bill that all of us are paying to take care of the uninsured right now? So hang on with us, and we'll be right back to speak some more with Larry.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
Another one that happened, for example, is when Hurricane Katrina went through and devastated the New Orleans area. People with cancer who needed to get their next chemotherapy treatment suddenly had no medical records. The mm-hmm. hospital was gone. The medical records were gone. They didn't even know what drug they were taking or what dosage they were supposed to get. So even if they went to MD Anderson or something like that where they could get the treatment, then the doctors there had to try to figure out what drug they were on and what dosage they needed. So they have the oncologists have actually done quite a bit to try to coordinate this information and put it into a special place on the internet where it's all backed up and give you a little wallet card to carry. But you can imagine if we had centralized electronic records, then this information would be much more available and would be available for you in that kind of a crisis. If you're away from home or if suddenly your hospital disappeared, your medical records would not disappear.
Sure, sure. As well as, you bring up a good point when you say the records are kind of scattered all about in different facilities. You know, that's also a playground or a breeding ground for fraud in the system.
Right, right. I mean, there's always opportunity for people to do the wrong thing, but I think there's a lot more opportunity for the right thing to happen for more people. But we're going to need more safeguards in the system if we're going to centralize records, because
right.
the chance that somebody who ought not to get access to it would get access to it is going to be at least as great as it is today. Actually, mm-hmm. one of the biggest problems for disclosing medical information where it shouldn't be disclosed today mm-hmm. are the clerical workers talking to each other, talking to their friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's actually one of the biggest ways that medical information is disclosed. They've been trying to close that gap now for several years, but there's always going to be some room for that to occur. But as long as it's okay for people to be discriminated against based on their medical information, people are going to resist centralization of records. We do have some new legislation that is supposed to help that. It doesn't actually kick in for another year, but genetic information is now better protected. But there's still room for, it's, for example, if an employer gets hold of your medical information and says, he has a 50% chance of having a heart attack by the time he's 45, do I really want to promote him?
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And that, we need to make sure that that's something that's not going to happen. And part of the reason that that is important is not so much just because they're afraid they'll train this person up and then he'll go, It's more a matter of, do I really want that person on my healthcare system? Because my bills are going to go up.
Right.
So if that element were taken out of the corporate budget, imagine how much that would free up the corporate budget.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, we're noticing, and we know this is coming, you know, in a few years, you know, the first of about 75 million baby boomers are going to start to retire.
Right.
And, you know, they're the first generation who has really contributed whole or fully to both Social Security and Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
And as each of those 75 million baby boomers begin to collect even a random $1,000 a month in Social Security and Medicare benefits,
mm-hmm.
the total added to our payroll, to the government's payroll, is $75 billion a month, which is, as you use Hurricane Katrina, it's like having a Hurricane Katrina every month.
Mm-hmm.
Yet where are we going to find the funds to pay that older individual, whether we promote him up in the ranks right now and say, well, he's a little older, do we want to promote him? But once he retires, where are we going to get the funds to pay this person? I mean, it's one of those issues that, and that's where I was saying earlier that the numbers are just scary. I know back in 2004, there were two economists that came up and said that the off-balance sheet obligations to the American people are roughly $72 trillion. And they came up with that. And while looking at it, they said, well, what is the value of the stocks and bonds on the world trading market? And they said, well, we have roughly $36 trillion in stock value. That's a few years ago. $31 trillion in bonds. So a total of $67 trillion, which leads us to deduce that with $67 trillion in the world's market, we don't even have the funds to pay the $72 trillion that we owe the American people in off-balance sheet obligations anyway. So those types of numbers are scary.
Yeah.
And we've known that we need to revamp these systems for 20 years now, 20-plus years now.
Mm-hmm.
And we've avoided. We've looked for the quick fix or short-term solution. But now we're about tapped out, and we need a leader or a president who's willing to address these issues. And they're not going to be quick fixes. You know, it may take
right.
us 4 or 5 years to even really face these issues.
But we need that longer term thinking, and that's, you know, America in general is up for short term thinking. It's like the fast food industry. We also have a sort of fast food mentality in legislation or in corporations. We're always looking at this month's bottom line or this quarter's bottom line, when in fact we ought to be looking at how healthy is this company going to be in the next 5 years? Where's the market going? Are we positioned to take advantage of that market? Or are we positioned to go out of business in 2 years? And the way our corporate executives are rewarded also is for short-term thinking, not long-term thinking. In the legislature, if you, say, raise taxes, you're likely not going to get elected in the next election. And so a lot of people are unwilling to come out and say, you know what, guys, this is what it's going to take.
It's one of those things. It's mind-boggling, but you're right. These corporate CEOs and CFOs, their average tenure for many of these people is just over a year. So you're right. They do have very short-term plans, and even their tenure is even shorter than the plans that they're rolling out a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the Wall Street Journal, Douglas Holtz Eakin, who's a top domestic policy advisor, to McCain, was cited as saying that McCain would use savings in Medicare and Medicaid to fund a portion of the refundable tax credit included in his health care proposal. And what I'm saying is we're assuming there will be a savings there. You know, we're assuming that we'll be able to find some savings in Medicare and Medicaid. You know, costs are expected to rise. They've risen 4 times as fast as their wages over the last 6 years. where do we see a savings coming in? How does that affect the American people if there is no savings?
But the only way that we're going to make the health care costs for our elders go down is if we do more preventive care.
That's
and
right.
And the people who have no insurance don't get preventive care. I was at a talk not too long ago where Governor Deval Patrick of Massachusetts was saying that he gave us an example. It's now mandatory in Massachusetts that everybody have health care insurance. So there was a woman who had been going to one of the emergency rooms in Massachusetts at a good hospital. She had been in and out of emergency rooms multiple times over the last 2 years, and she'd come in with a terrible sore throat, and they would give her medication and send her home. And because she had no insurance, she was, you know, using the emergency room as her doctor's care. But there, you take potluck with whoever you're going to see. They only see you once. They don't develop a relationship with you. So now that she has insurance, she has a primary care physician. And she went to the primary care physician, and he said, let's look more deeply into these chronic sore throats that you keep having. And after they did a bunch of tests, what they determined is she has throat cancer. She'd been going in with symptoms of throat cancer for 2 years, and it wasn't getting the proper care. Mm-hmm. At this point, she's in deep sneakers. You know, the treatment for advanced cancer is a lot worse than the treatment for early stage cancer. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing we need to head off. The chronic diseases, the diagnosis and treatment of more severe conditions at an early stage. And that's one easy way to reduce costs. But that does mean we need everybody to have routine preventive care.
That's right. That's right. Currently, less than 4 cents of every healthcare dollar is spent on prevention and public health in the areas that you were just discussing, cancer screenings, immunizations, things of that such. I mean, it's just so much of a small portion. I mean, 4 cents, less than 4 cents of every dollar is going toward prevention, and it's such a big piece of our quality of life, and it's such a big piece of the healthcare process.
Right. But so how do we get poor people to a point where they can get good preventive care?
Well, I think the first thing is by Tuesday, bringing in President Barack Obama so that we can kind of change the policies and procedures of the country. I think what we, what we're going to be looking for is for Obama to do the things that he said that he would do, which is revise those plans, revise those Medicare policies, make it feasible. And again, this is going to have to work with everybody's buy-in. The employers, the private health plans, the government, the drug manufacturers, we're going to have to rally them in a way where we can make these alterations to the plan, make it feasible where there is choice for the patient, make it feasible for the physician to provide adequate health care, mm-hmm. as well as make it affordable. And by, with the changes and the alterations to the plan, that's where we'd make it affordable for these people who, one, don't have access to the knowledge or education, and two, don't have the funds to get the treatment. We're going to have to revamp the whole structure if we're going to really take care of some of these people who haven't had the opportunity to get adequate health care. And as an American people, we have to come together and think not so much just for, me and my family, but how about the family next door?
Let's take a tiny break here, and we'll be right back to finish our great discussion with Larry. And I'll give you the forecast of next week's show, and by next week, we'll know how this election turned out. Stay with us now, and we'll be right back. Let me take a moment here to remind you to please go to powerfulpatient.org and pick up the handout that goes with this show. It has more information about the websites that we've mentioned. It has the AMA website, and the American Association of Family Physicians website. It also has pointers to the platforms of the two candidates so that you can compare them for yourself and listen to videos in their own words of what their programs are going to be. And as always, we will appreciate your support. We depend on your help to fund this program. Please donate to the Cancer Research Fund and bring us back another day. Stay with us now. We're going to be back speaking with Larry Jemison.
You know, I don't know what you feel about the Michael Moore pictures, but Bowling for Columbine, you know, in Bowling for Columbine, Michael Moore did some interviews with people in Canada as well as people in the United States to try to look at what are the differences about violence in America. Mm-hmm. And because he said there are at least as many guns per capita in Canada as there are in the United States, that we speak the same language, they watch the same movies, they play the same video games. So why isn't there at least as much violence in Canada as there is in the United States? And one of the factors he came up with was health care for all. And it was clear when he would speak with people in Canada, they said, well, of course, everybody has a right to be well. They have a right to that basic structure in their lives so that they have that safety net. They know that in a healthcare situation, you know, if they get sick, they're going to be taken care of. In the United States, we don't have that. People
sure.
walk around out there terrified that they're going to get sick. And if they are sick and they need a medicine that's going to cost even $50 a week or $500 a week or $5,000 a week, and they don't make that kind of money, what are they going to do? And sometimes people make stupid decisions that become societal problems. They rob a bank, they shoot somebody, and a lot of it is just out of that desperation.
That's right.
And so if we can take that bit of desperation out of the system and that huge cost. I mean, look at that lady I was talking about with the throat cancer.
Mm-hmm.
For 2 years, she made at least 10 visits to the emergency room. Now, she had no insurance. She waited until she was sick enough that they couldn't turn her away. So you and I are paying that bill, right, tax dollars for, how much is it, $500 per emergency room visit? Easy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, times 10. So she spent $5,000 going and getting poor care. Right. How far would $5,000 go with a preventive care with a general practitioner? It would go quite a ways.
Sure.
So
sure
we're spending, it's not that we're not spending the money. We're spending too much money doing too little.
You're right. You're exactly right. And that same $5,000, is about what you would get from the credits that Senator McCain was going to offer, a $5,000 credit for that health care.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, that's just not going to be enough because we're assuming we have a foothold or even a rough estimate of what our medical fees or medical bills would run us for the year.
Well, I believe that credit was intended to help you purchase insurance, but that's less than half what it would cost for the year to buy health insurance for a family of four.
Or here's another example. I spoke last week at a kidney cancer conference. Now, 3 years ago, we had no drugs for kidney cancer. If you got kidney cancer, you were in a fight for your life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still a difficult fight, but today there are all kinds of drugs, new ones that are coming out on the market. These new drugs are $7,000 a month. So if you need a treatment that's going to cost $7,000 a month, this is just for the drug, by the way. This
right.
is not the doctors, not the tests. This is an expensive disease.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so if somebody said, okay, you can have this treatment, it'll save your life, but it's going to cost $7,000 for the next 10 months. So where are you going to get that kind of money? Are you just going to say, well, I guess I'm just going to write my will and, right?
You're exactly right.
But it becomes the haves versus the have-nots in a very cruel way.
And people become desperate, like you said before. What will you do to come up with the $70,000? Success and survival are very close in nature, in that both of them will make you do things that, you know, deep down probably aren't the best for you, that you know are wrong. When people are trying to survive, they will do some things they wouldn't normally do.
You know, the UK was just recently looking at some of these new drugs that are on the market for $7,000 and more a month. And basically they said to the drug companies, you know what, we're not willing to pay that. And so the UK health system is refusing to pay for some of these new drugs. And they've said, we will pay up to $50,000 per quality year of extending someone's life. Now,
Wow. What
that set off on the internet was a whole bunch of outrage at the UK health system saying, you know, how can they deny people access to these drugs? But I'm thinking, I think it's important that the UK draw a line in the sand and say, you know what, guys? You've stepped beyond what the market's willing to bear.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right.
You know from your marketing background, a product is only worth what somebody's willing to pay.
That's right.
And you don't want to set the price too low, because you don't want to leave money on the table, as they say. You know, if somebody were willing to pay $200 and you said, oh, you can have it for $50, you've just left $150 on the table. So you don't want to price it too low. But on the other hand, you don't want to price it so high that nobody buys it.
That's right.
And up to this point in the United States, they set the price and we pay.
That's right.
But the UK has said, you know what, guys? At that price, we're not buying. And I think that's an important message.
And I think, you know, I think that it's to a point where we have to take a stand.
Yeah.
We have to take a stand. And that's why I said we need all parties to buy in. And if not, then, you know, we may have to start putting some pressures on some folks.
Mm-hmm.
So that these drugs are affordable and still efficacious. Because I can hear the drug company saying, hey, look, we put a lot of money in the research. It costs a lot of money for R&D of these products.
Well, and they did, but here's the other side of that. If you price your product at $7,000 a month and there are only three people who can buy it, then you're going to make $21,000. If you price it at $2,000 a month and 50 people buy it, then you've made a lot more money.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And I think once we get everybody on board, this can happen. But we have to take a stand, just as the UK did.
Mm-hmm.
If we're truly in the business of caring about the lives of American citizens.
Right. So I think that there's a lot of work to be done, and I think nobody has all the magic answers, but I think there are some really good options on the table, and I hope that people will take their own concerns about healthcare to the voting booth on Tuesday and help us make some smart decisions about how we move forward.
I think the exact same. I think if we have more individuals such as yourself who care enough to do the speaking engagements that you do the research that you do, spend the countless hours educating the masses, we will be in a much better place 10 years from now, so that you and I can have a conversation then and say, hey, look how great the world has become.
That's great. Thank you. So tell us again, your book is?
My book is How to Make It in a World That Wasn't Made for You. It's available on all the online retailers as well as on my website, Larry Speaks. LarrySpeaks.com.
And Larry, it's not entirely, of course, about healthcare. It's about, you mentioned education and so forth. It's how to hopefully get yourself up an economic level or two from where you started.
Exactly. It's exactly. My book is written to help you identify those challenges in your life, face them, overcome them, and then reap the benefits of your success. We all want to be successful, and we all determine. We all term success a little bit different in our own eyes. You know, somebody else may want a large house. You may want an education. You may want an MBA. So success is going to be different for all. But no matter what it is, we're going to face challenges. My book helps you to face those challenges, how to get ahead. It will speak to you about attitude, waking up on the right side of your mind versus on the wrong side of the bed. It'll talk to you about the purpose of the vote, the reason why we vote, and why we want you to come out and express your choice on Tuesday. And we think this is a great place when you have the opportunity to come out and vote for the candidate of your choice.
That's right. There are a lot of places that people live in this world where they don't have the right to vote. And there are a lot of people in this country who didn't used to have the right to vote, including all the women, and there are a lot of other groups as well. So sometimes we take that right a little too lightly, and we don't think that it counts. But in fact, it counts a great deal.
It does. It counts. I sum up the vote. I say the vote is really quick. It determines who gets how much of what, when, where, and how often, as it pertains to issues that we talked about today, health care, loans, mortgages, income, employment. You know, all of these things are really determined by the vote, and that's what you're getting to express your interest when you step up to the polls and vote.
Right, and that's how we make our wishes known in Washington. We elect local people who will speak for us in a way that we want them to speak, and we send them trotting off to Washington to represent us. And we also all have the right to write letters to our representatives, our senators and our congresspeople, and go visit them in Washington and make sure that they hear from your mouth what you want said. And that's the real power in this country. It's not, you know, how many people can you defeat with your muscles. It's more how many people you can influence with your words.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and your ideas. Because what we've done so far over the last few years hasn't worked, and we must change our direction. And to do that, oftentimes your ideas, when you write in to your senators and your congressmen, is actually maybe something that can help change this land for the better.
Right.
I encourage everyone to go out and learn the issues that these candidates are representing. Learn what they're speaking about. Years ago, many people would vote their country club. They would vote their PTA, whatever was comfortable in that setting amongst their peers. It was okay to vote that. Hey, I want to be like Joyce, or I want to be like George, or what have you. But this election is way too serious. We're in a state of crisis right now. And we need people to really consider the issues and vote for what they think is going to change this nation.
Right, and that's one of the reasons we have this privacy in the voting booth. In that voting booth, you're not answering to anybody but your own conscience. And you should vote your own conscience and make your vote heard in the whole system. Make sure that we know how you feel and not how your friend feels.
That's right. That's right. We're voting for now, and we're voting for the future.
Yeah, and hopefully we take some of that longer-term thinking. One of the examples that came to mind as you were speaking is that in my town we have to vote on the school budget. And traditionally a lot of the senior citizens would vote against the school budget because they said, after all, I don't have kids in the school. Why should I be funding the school budget? And the problem is you're educating the guy who's going to be the mayor in 10 years. Right?
That's right.
So
that's right.
If you want a smart mayor in your town, you want good schools.
That's
right. And it's that kind of longer-term thinking. We're cultivating the society that we're going to be living in, the people who are going to be living next door, the people who are going to be the police and fire and the early responders and the mayor and all the administrative officials. All of that is coming up. If they are educated and well, then they're going to have one attitude. If they're not well educated and if they're dealing with hysteria about their health and their finances, then they're going to act in a very different way. And
you're so right.
We need to really look at what kind of a society do we want to build, where we want to live.
That's right. And times have changed so much. when I was in grade school, my competition was the young lady or the young man who was to the right and to the left of me, and we were competing for grades. You know, oftentimes now our competition is coming from overseas who, you know, these young folks are learning 2 and 3 languages as a mandate or as a prerequisite. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much just are we not allocating funds for our town so that our kids can get education. Our kids are also being groomed or need to be groomed to compete against the leaders of tomorrow, which oftentimes aren't even in the United States.
Right. Very well said. Well, Larry, thank you very much. And I hope that everybody goes out and votes on Tuesday for the candidate
of
their choice. And that we fix this healthcare system, because I believe, as you do, that we need to overhaul this system and do it quickly. And you and I are not alone. If the American Medical Association is finally saying it, they traditionally have been one of the big opponents of change in the healthcare system. So we've gotten to a point now where even the AMA is saying, you know what, we got to fix this. And so read up what's in the paper, look on the AMA website. I'm going to put some stuff on the VHL website, vhl.org, too, so people can look at that, look at the handout that goes with this show, and whoever you think has the best plan for the country, that's the one you should vote for.
Wonderful. So,
thanks
for having me.
Much.
It's an absolute pleasure being here with you today.
Thanks. Take care.
Take care.
And thank you for being with us today as well. Next week, we're going to talk about healthcare in the military in honor of Veterans Day. So I hope you'll join us for that discussion. And I hope your candidate wins on Tuesday. And I'll see you next week. So meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient.